The next thing is today's Volunteer Sunday, where we talk about, and I'll be sharing today, about what it means to serve, what it means to use our gifts, talents, abilities to serve God and the church. And so we'll be doing that today, but I just want to say thank you. We've got so many people jumping in, using their gifts and talents, serving here at Arbor Heights. And if you just pause for a moment and realize this, what we're doing right here, would not be possible without a whole host of people serving. There would be no children's ministry. There would be no youth ministry. There would be no music. There would be no snacks. There would be no coffee for Christ at night. Right? None of that would be here without you. And so I just want to hear, I just want you to hear from me and on behalf of our staff team, thank you. Thank you so much for what you do. Thank you for sacrificing and serving here at Arbor Heights. We really appreciate it. Love you. Well, as I said, today is Volunteer Sunday, and so we're going to talk about what that looks like to serve. And the title of today's message is this: Christians Eat Last. Christians Eat Last. 2014, the NCAA men's basketball tournament in Dallas, Texas was held there, and four teams are there for the Final Four, hence Final Four. And the team that was number one team was getting ready to play, and a reporter caught up with the coach. And as he's walking in there, and he went over to the coach, and he went to ask him about the season, and they were the top team. And he said to the coach, "Why has your team done so well? What is it about the team that has made it come as far as it has? Because everybody wants to know about your success." And the coach paused. And he said, "Well, we actually have a motto on our team. And that motto is this: good people do for themselves, great people do for others." Good people do for themselves, great people do for others. He said, that's the motto that we have in Breakthrough Success. And I thought, what if that was the motto of Arbor Heights Community Church? Good people do for themselves, great people do for others. What if that was the motto in your home? What if that was the motto in your school or in your workplace? What if that was the motto that you live by? Good people do for themselves, great people do for others. It's interesting, the part of the title of this message I got from a leadership guy named Simon Sinek. Maybe some of you have heard of him. He's done a number of TED Talks before. And he wrote a book in 2014 called Leaders Eat Last. Leaders Eat Last. And if you're wondering where that title came from, where it came from is this: is Simon Sinek. I was looking at different companies and organizations for leadership and how they do and which ones thrive and which ones are great. And one of the ones he camped on especially was the Marines. And he noticed why in the Marines is there this unique culture of men and women who have incredible character, and just the culture of the Marines is just amazing. And so he went and he asked Lieutenant George Flynn in the Marines why of the success. He said, "What makes the Marines so great?" And he said, simple, three words: officers eat last. Officers eat last. Let me explain. This is what he says, George Flynn. "When you are with Marines gathering to eat, you will notice that the most junior are served first and the most senior are served last. When you witness this act, you will also note that no order is given. Marines just do it. At the heart of this very simple action is the Marine Corps approach to leadership. Marine leaders are expected to eat last because the true price of leadership is the willingness to place the needs of others above your own. Great leaders truly care about those they are privileged to lead and understand that the true cost of that leadership privilege comes at the expense of self-interest." Comes at the expense of self-interest. What makes us great is that good people do for themselves, great people do for others. And we've built a culture of that in the Marines. But I'd like to suggest this, that it's not just leaders and Marines and Final Four teams that eat last. It's Christians who should eat last. It's all Christians who should be eating last. You know, as I said before, today is Volunteer Sunday. Today is the day where we talk about why we have this value as a church community of eating last, of taking last, of taking a posture of putting other people before myself and at the expense of myself so they might be blessed. Why at Arbor Heights we believe it is better to lose your life than to gain your life. That actually in losing your life, you find life. That's what we believe at Arbor Heights. And it's the value that we live out in serving. And I want to say just pretty quickly to you, if you're new today and you're getting a tad nervous and like, is he gonna ask us to sign up to serve? Yes! No, I'm kidding. No. No, listen, if you're new, we check us out, be here for a while, see if Arbor Heights is the place for you, if it's the right place to call home. But I do want you to hear this. If you do call Arbor Heights home, we will call you to serve. We will call you to step in and to give up your life and serve. And here's what I want you to hear today, and what I want to unpack more is this. Real life is found not in protecting my life, but in letting it go. Real life is found not in protecting my life, but in letting it go. I want to read to you a scripture passage in the book of Mark. And I love the Gospels capturing these real life moments with Jesus and his disciples, because it sounds just like us or just like me. Okay. Here's what it is. This is Mark 9:33-35. Mark 9:33-35. This is what Mark says. They, the disciples, they had just been with Jesus, and Jesus had just said to them that I'm going to be going to be arrested, and I'm going to be put on trial, and then falsely accused, and then I'm going to be tortured and crucified. So that's what he just said. And then he said, they, the disciples, came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, he asked them, what were you arguing about on the road? That's classic, isn't it? The disciples, it's like, this is half the Gospels, is them arguing and fighting on the road somewhere. And he says, why did you guys argue on the road? And there it says, but they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. Oh my gosh, you just gotta shake your head, right? Don't you? You just gotta shake your head and be like, are you serious? Like, of all the things you could have been arguing and fighting about all the ways you could have been serving other people, caring for other people, and the argument was, who's the greatest? Right? That's the argument. And Jesus, as he always does, I'm sure as he should have said, probably too, was like, Father, really, these guys? Like, these guys? Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, listen, guys, here it is. Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servants of all. Anyone who wants to be first must be the very last and the servant of all. You know, I think the challenge is this, is that this is the only life you and I have. It's the only life you and I have. So I think the default of every human heart is therefore what? Well, I will hold on to this life. I will clench this life. I will clutch this life. I will protect this life. I will defend this life. I will pamper this life. I will cater this life. I will do whatever I can because it's the only life I've got. And if you had 70 or 80 different lifetimes, right, wouldn't you probably watch people like, yeah, I'm willing to give up a couple for other people. But if I got one life, no way. No way am I doing that. And so we hang on to this life. And I've seen it over and over and over in my own heart. Here's one example of my own life. So back when I was in high school, I've shared before, I worked for a basketball camp in the summers. And this was in Spokane, Washington, and I was at a university campus over there. And so we're over there, middle of the summer, Spokane, there's no air conditioning. So in my room, I'm with three other guys, there's four of us in there. I mean, it's like 100 degrees. And so you're going to bed at night, and you're just going to bed in a pile of sweat. Has anybody been there? Be all right. Some of us this last summer, if you're home didn't have air conditioning, many nights laying there in just a pool of sweat, that was us four guys. Although the one thing we did have was we put a fan in the corner of the room. And so we could kind of blow out the room, which I think honestly probably did nothing. But it was there at least right there. Well, one night we're in there, and I wake up at 1:32 in the morning, and I'm just laying there sweaty, and I think to myself, there's an easy way to solve this. And so I get up and I grab the fan, and I put the fan directly next to my bed, blowing on my face. It was great. And I woke up in the morning feeling refreshed and feeling nice and cooled down. And I wake up and the other three guys are already awake, and they're like, hey, that's weird. Didn't the fan, wasn't in the corner of the room at the beginning of the night? And I was like, I have no idea. And they're like, it's weird how it winds up directly in front of you the whole night. How did you sleep? And I said, I slept great. How did you guys sleep? Horrible. But that's me, putting the fan around me. That's me. Another example is this, is our family is with snacks. Whenever we go on an outing, and a longer outing, especially when we've gone hiking as a family, which is a number of years ago, I would get snacks. And then we would get to our destination, or maybe hiking, or whatever it is, it's been a while, and then I would pull out my snacks. If you know me, I'm snacking like every hour I'm snacking. And I would start snacking, and my wife would look at me and go, "Where's the snacks for the rest of us?" And I'd go, "I don't know, I didn't pack any." And she'd be like, "You didn't pack any snacks for anybody but you." And I was like, "Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. So you're getting a window into who I am here, right?" So I just pack snacks for my own self. This is all of us, isn't it? It's all of us. We clutch and we hang on to this life. But it's so crazy. It's so crazy that we have it backwards, that we have it the opposite. Because here's the thing, it's so weird. All of us live life like that. But then all of a sudden, 2,000 years ago, this guy comes on the scene, and he lives his life the exact opposite. Rather than protecting his life, this guy came and he lived letting his life go. You look at Jesus' life in the Gospels, and you see him going around feeding people, praying for people, listening to people, teaching people, healing people, rescuing people, encouraging people, defending people, and at the end of his life, if that wasn't enough, willingly surrenders himself to the Roman army, and then is crucified on a cross and gave his life up for us. That's what Jesus did. Jesus' constant focus throughout his entire ministry was always everybody else. For 3 years in his ministry, it was always about laying down, letting go, serving others, dying to myself so other people could have it. And if you think about it, the sole reason he even came was for other people. And you see, he lives such an opposite life that it confronts all of us. Now we've got to go, what are we doing? Why did he do that? Because no one lives like that. Why did he choose to do that? In Philippians 2, 5 through 8, here's what Paul says. Who, Jesus, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. Even death on a cross. Why did he do this? Why did Jesus give up his life like this? And I think the answer is what I've said before, is that real life is found not in protecting my life. Real life is found in letting it go. The true life is found when I actually let go of my life. The most fulfilling, peace-filled, meaningful, love, joy-filled life is found when you stop living for you and you start living for God. You know what's really interesting about sharing earlier, that Simon Sinek and that book he wrote, Leaders Be Last, he shares a story in there. And as I was mentioning, he was looking at the Marines and some of the other armed forces as well, and just noticing kind of just unique people had a character that he couldn't explain. And as he looked at that, his premise or belief was, you know what, I think that they're just different. Like, they're just wired differently, these people in Marines and you know, in the armed forces. But he had an experience that changed his thinking on that. And that experience was, he talks about it, when he went over into the Middle East, with a group of Marines, and he got to be with them. And here's what he said. He said, everything on our trip went wrong. He said, we actually got stuck at the Marine base because the base came under rocket attack when I was there. And it was through this experience where I learned what service really means. Service means giving to others with no expectation of anything in return. Fulfillment, calm, and security, peace of mind, confidence, all come from a willingness to serve others. And here's the key. Because only when I decided, he said, that I would look after others, did I find calm, security, and peace of mind. Did you catch that? It was only when I stopped thinking about myself and how I could protect myself, and I actually started thinking about how I could lay down my life for other people, that I found calmness, peace, and security. The exact thing Jesus said would happen. When I stopped living for me and started living for other people, I found my life. I found the things that God wanted to promise to give to me. He went on to talk about, here's what he said, the rank of office is not what makes someone a leader. Leadership is the choice to serve others with or without any formal rank. Leaders are the ones who run headfirst into the unknown. They rush toward the danger. They put their own interests aside to protect us or pull us into the future. Leaders would sooner sacrifice what is theirs to save ours, and they would never sacrifice what is ours to save what is theirs. This is what it means to be a leader. I would only change one thing, and that's that last sentence. This is what it means to be a Christian. This is what it means to be a Christian. Christians would sooner sacrifice what is theirs to save what is ours, and Christians would never sacrifice what is ours to save what is theirs. Christians eat last. Christians eat last. Real life is found not in protecting my life. It is found in laying my life down. Matthew 16:25, Jesus says this almost exact phrase, for whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. The greatest paradox you will ever hear. For whoever wants to save their life and hang on to it, you will actually lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. And the question is, why is that? Why is that the case? And I want to suggest this is, as I empty my life, God fills it with his. As I empty my life, God fills it with his. I think that's it. I think that's why when you lay down your life and you let go of your life, what you crazily discover is God fills you with what he's been wanting to fill you with the whole time, himself. He gives you what you need. He gives me what I need to be able to live for him and to live for other people, because the truth is, every single one of us knows right now what I'm telling all of us this morning, there's no way we can live this way. I'd be the first to say, this is crazy. There's no way I'm going to live my week dying to myself in every way and laying my life down for people. No way am I going to do that. The only way I can do that is by doing that and letting God fill me up to live like that in my life. Every single day, God's pouring into me because I'm pouring out. I think maybe here's the problem for a lot of us, is that God can't pour into a full cup. God can't pour into a full cup. So if I continually protect me and defend me, and my week is all about organizing and working for me, guess what? God's got nothing to pour into. He can only pour into an empty cup. And how do you get an empty cup? Because you're laying your life down for other people. Because you continually doubt other people. Right? If you think about Jesus, you notice in the Gospels this rhythm that Jesus had over and over and over. Jesus would be out with people for a season, and then he would be going privately and spending time with God the Father. Then he would go back with people, and then with God, go back with people. Right? You see this over and over and over in the Gospels. Why does he do that? Well, I think here's the answer. Because as he's out with people, all he's doing is giving out. He's pouring out to people, sacrificing to people, loving people. And then what he does is he goes back to Father so he can get filled up. Jesus' private times with God are like a spiritual gas station. He goes there to get filled up. He goes there to get renewed and replaced with God who wants to fill him up inside to do more things. So am I pouring my life out so God can fill up mine with his? How would you describe your life today? How would you describe your week today? How would you describe the posture of your heart? Is the posture of honestly organizing things for me, or is my week about laying my life down and blessing and loving those people around me? I want to share a couple, I think, follow-ups from this, and one is this, and I've already said this, but just to hammer home a little more, is this life is not about me. This life is really about God and others. And church, this is the truth. This life is not about you. It is not about you. I love what Rick Warren said. Rick Warren said this: the purpose of your life is far greater than your personal fulfillment, your peace of mind, or even your happiness. It's far greater than your family, your career, or even your wildest dreams and ambitions. If you want to know why you were placed on this planet, you must begin with God. You were born by his purpose and for his purpose. The only reason I am here is because of God, and the only way I discover anything in my life is looking to God. I mean, you live amongst a culture that is all about self-discovery and find yourself and create yourself, but the reality is, the truth is, when you do that, you actually lose yourself. You lose yourself. The only way you find yourself is when you look to God. You think about this idea, that knocking about yourself. Have you ever pondered for a moment the fact of just Jesus coming to earth and why he came to earth? Have you ever just pondered for and realized the only reason he came was for you and me? He didn't come for any benefit of his own. Zero. And I would ask this, have you ever experienced that? Like, you would go into something and you literally had only the interest of other people before me. There was no desire for anything of my own. I can't do that for 30 minutes. I can't, let alone a lifetime, but just that, let that sink in. Jesus literally came for you and me, and the only reason he came was for us. The only reason he came was to bless and to love us. Mark 10:45, Jesus says this, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve." Philippians 2:3-4, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, rather in humility value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interest of others." 2 Corinthians 5:15, I love this one, it says, "And he, Jesus, died for all." Why did he die for us? "And he died for all, that those who live should no longer live for themselves, but for him who died for them and was raised again." Jesus died for you so you stopped living for you. So I quit living for me. And I quit trying to protect my life and guard my life and pamper my life and cater my life. And he would say, "Die to your life. And let me do something different." Now, I just want to be clear and clarify. Please don't hear this. I'm not saying we don't ever take time out for ourselves. Don't hear that. I'm not saying we don't pause and allow God to replenish our spirit. Again, look at Jesus' life. He did that. He pulled himself away from people. But here's the big difference. When Jesus pulled himself away and Jesus spent time on himself, the only ultimate purpose behind it was so I could go back out and pour to people. It wasn't really all about himself, and it can never be all about me. I spend time focusing on me so I can bless other people. So I can pour out to other people. So I can give up my life. Someone said this comment this week. I read this and I thought I'd share it. It convicted me, and here's what it is. As we point our wheat to a throne, Jesus points our wheat to a cross. We point our wheat to a throne. It's about me. It's about my plans. It's about my hopes. It's about my comforts for the week. And Jesus points me to a cross in the week. Jesus says, "I invite you to wake up tomorrow, Monday morning, and the invitation for you and I is to die. To die to yourself. To die to protecting your life. To die to what you're going to do with your life and say, 'Jesus, use me.' Jesus, who needs to be blessed this week? Who needs to be encouraged this week? Who needs to be prayed for this week? Who needs to know that you love them this week, God?" That's what my week wants to be about. How can I disadvantage myself this week so I can advantage other people? That's the heart of Jesus. Why did Jesus come? He came to serve. He came to lay his life down. He came to let go of everything and serve us and die for us. The path to a great life is not up, it's down. The path to a great life is not up, it's down. I want to share one more thing on this and then wrap up. And here's what it is that we don't serve people for who they are. We serve people because of who Jesus is. We don't serve people for who they are. We serve because of who Jesus is. That verse I read earlier in Mark, it ended by saying this: "Anyone," Jesus says, "who wants to be first must be very last and the servant of" who? All. All people. John 13 in the Gospels is when Jesus gathers disciples together, that kind of last meal as he makes his way to the cross. And if you're familiar with that section, it's when Jesus gathers disciples, and then he got out a towel, and he wrapped a towel around himself, And then Jesus began to walk the disciples and to wash their feet. Now, if you know anything about first century culture, the only people who would do that was the lowest person in the home. I want you to think for a moment, this is God himself who is with people, and rather than being served, he says, I will stoop down, and I want to wash, in that culture, your smelly, dirty, gross feet. That's what I want to do. And he gets to Peter, and I love when he gets to Peter, and Peter's like, you're not going to wash any part of me. And he says, Peter, if I don't wash you, you have no place with me. And then Peter's like, wash my whole body. Wash all of me. Right? I love Peter and that. But, you know, here's one thing, if you didn't realize this, do you know whose feet Jesus washes he's going around? The feet of Judas. And Jesus knew exactly what Judas was going to do. Jesus was going to betray him. And walk out even three years. I want you to think of 3 years spending with someone. And then that person betrays you. How hurt, how wounded would you be? And Jesus knelt down at Judas' feet and he washed his feet. I think it raises the question, who's betrayed you? Who's hurt you? Who's wounded you? Who has manipulated you? Who has wronged you? And I think the question is, why did Jesus do that? Why did he do that to Judas? Why did he tell Judas, you know, listen, Judas, why don't you head out? The way you're, what you're going to do, the way you're acting, I'm not washing your feet, get out of here. Why did he do that? And I think the reason is this, is he wants to show you and I how to treat people who've wronged us and betrayed us and wounded us so that a root of bitterness and resentment and anger doesn't grow in our hearts and destroy us. That's why. I think he wants to show us that those people who have wronged and hurt us, that actually what we need to do is serve them. Do you know what breaks inside of us these feelings of resentment and bitterness and anger towards people who hurt us? Do you know what breaks that? Serving people. Serving them. There was a story I heard this week of a pastor down in the South, and he was talking with another pastor friend, and this is what happened. And so he had his church building, and they were going to expand. They were going to grow onto another property, and it was right next to them, so it's adjacent property. There's a number of acres available. And so this pastor went and talked to the farmer who owned the property. And he talked to him, and they worked out a deal. And as this guy was talking to another pastor, he said, hey, man, you know, older guy, he said, I'm a Southern guy. I've been doing this all my life. I've done a number of deals without any kind contract. I'm the kind of guy, you know, your word is your word. If we shake hands, we're in. So he said, I shook hands with that farmer. We agreed on a deal. It was done over. That's it. He said, then the next day, I was so excited. I called up another pastor friend of mine. And I told him about it. Hey, I'm so excited for our church. We got this. We're getting this property. We're super pumped. We're going to build this other addition. We're going to build a playground out there. It's going to be really cool, all the things we're doing. A couple days later, the farmer called back and let him know that he sold the property to his pastor friend and told him. So his pastor friend and told him went behind his back and made a deal with the farmer and bought the property. And the pastor got on the phone to another guy. He's like, well, what did you do? And he said, well, I called him up. I said, hey, why don't you and I meet for breakfast? And he said, okay. And so he went and he pulled the parking lot early. He got there early. And the other guy finally got there, and he pulled up next to him, and the one guy rolled on his window, and he said, hey, man, you know what, rather than breakfast, why don't I just come on over in your car and hop in your car for a minute? He said, sure. And so he got in the car with him, and he sat down, and he said, listen, what you did was wrong. What you did was really wrong. You should not have done that. It was really hurtful, and you've wronged me and our church. And he said, so that's really hurtful. He said, but I want you to know this. We want to be the first church that helps you with a down payment for that property. And he handed him a check. And the other passed the phone, he said, you gave him a check? He goes, well, did he take the money? And he said, yeah, he did. He's a snake. And he said, well, why did you do that? Why did you give him a check of all people who did that to you? And he said, because I'm free. I'm free, he said, that God can do whatever he wants with that guy. That's God's problem and him, it's not me. But I'm going to serve him. I'm going to serve him, number one, to bless him, and I'm going to serve him to free my own heart. Because I don't want to have a heart of bitterness and anger and resentment. You know, maybe there's some people in your life this morning that you don't want to serve. And you have all kinds of justifications as to why you can't serve them. And I'm not saying you should go serve everybody like that, but I am saying this, maybe you ought to spend some time this week praying and asking God if there's someone you need to be serving. Because here's the deal. If Jesus can serve Judas, we can serve other people. John, will serving at Arbor Heights be harder? Yes. Is serving with other people going to get really messy? Yes. If I join a serve team here at Arbor Heights, will there be people I don't get along with? Yes. Yeah, I can guarantee that. Will I be asked to do things that stretch me out of my comfort zone and make me uncomfortable? Yes. Will I have to sacrifice and give up things like time and convenience? Yes. Will I have to work through conflicts with other people? Yes. Will I enjoy every minute of serving? No. No. But will I find true and beautiful life? Yes. Yes. Will I begin to discover more of my purpose? Yes. Will I get to make an impact in someone else's life? Yes. Will I get to help people grow in their faith? Yes. Will I get to experience more of Jesus in my own life? Yes. Will I get to dig down and develop more of a mature faith in God? Yes. Will I get a $10,000 bonus at the end of the year? No, you will not. You will absolutely not. Christians eat last. We eat last. Who is God calling you to serve this week? I invite you and encourage you to pray. God is calling you to serve, and it may not be the person you want to serve. Let's pray. Lord God, you came down and you didn't tell us to be a people who bow down and worship you. You were a God who came and you gave up everything for us, Lord. The more I hear it, it just shocks me. It just shocks me. And maybe if we're familiar with church culture, it just kind of goes into one ear out the other, God. But to hear the God of the universe came and became a servant should just break us inside. Should just break our callous self-centeredness, God, and then our dependence on ourselves, and call us to a life to say, I got to stop protecting my life and guarding my life and pampering my life and constantly erecting boundaries around everything in my life. I need to lay it down, God, and live for you and find true life that's meaningful and life-giving. It breathes new life into my veins, into my bones, and makes me the person, the man, the woman that you called me to be. God, would you create Arbor Heights, continue to create us to be, God, a serving church. Will we be a church that lays our lives down for each other and for this community, God? We need your help. It's only possible in you. So we cry out this morning, God, do what you got to do inside of us. Do a work in us so you can do a work through us.
Amen.
Thank you, Jesus, in your precious name. Amen. Hey, go ahead and stand up. Let's continue worshiping.